Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancashire co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall. So, Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
Pretty good. England won in the T20 today, which is good. We'll talk a little bit about that later. It's now 2-1 at the time of recording this, and yeah, it's going to be an interesting end to the series. India, their form is a bit up and down at the moment. As I said, we'll talk a lot about that later. But yeah, it's going to be a very interesting end to the series. And obviously, it's good that England won. Hopefully, they can close out the series and then win the ODIs and kind of, come back to the English summer on a positive note, because it has been tough, obviously, throughout the Test series, certainly the last three. So yeah, it'd be nice to be able to, win the ODIs and T20s.
Absolutely, of course. And I bet you were absolutely buzzing today with Joss Butler. He was absolutely sensational, wasn't he? 26 ball 50, 83 not out, completely took the game away from India. It was a brilliant individual knock. And then, of course, your boy as well, Johnny Bairstow. 40 not out, the way in which he attacked Yuzvendra Chahal and the spinners. Absolutely brilliant. What did you make of their performances today?
Yeah, firstly, Joss Butler, that's just showing how good he is. And for me, I know he's just scored 83, but for me, there's still, should he open the batting or should he bat number three? For me, that's still a question mark, purely because I want England to get the best team and Joss Butler can bat anywhere. And I feel like Johnny Bairstow could have also got 83 today, not to take anything away from Joss. But so for me, it's still the order isn't set in stone. But I mean, yeah, great to see him getting runs. And also, as you say, Johnny Bairstow, really, really good to see him get scoring runs. As I say, personally, I would still like to see him open the batting and then kind of rejig the order. But I do feel very sorry for Owen Morgan, who just cannot get a kick with the bat, really. You know, he was just waiting for ages today, wasn't he? I just kept seeing, they kept cutting to him. Obviously, it's his 100th T20 as well. Massive congratulations to him. And they just kept cutting to him, talking to Archer and Jordan. And just, yeah, it must be very frustrating. But at the same time, I'm sure he wasn't displeased.
Fun fact about that, the fourth man in cricket right now to reach 100 T20i caps. What an achievement. Yeah. What a legendary captain.
Yeah. Incredible.
And of course, Joe, we'll talk about this more as the podcast progresses. But on today's weekly podcast, we do, of course, have to go into this week's county news. And to be honest, there's been quite a lot. And we'll start right up north. We'll start with the most northern county, which is, of course, Durham. And we start at Durham because Cameron Bancroft has re-signed for Durham as their second overseas. Of course, the first one being David Beddingham, who came in 2020. But this is a really, really interesting signing. Of course, Cameron Bancroft was absolutely fantastic in 2019 across formats. He scored 726 runs at 45.37 in 9 county championship matches, as well as 377 at 94.25 in the Royal London One Day Cup. The only thing that I will say about Cameron Bancroft, of course, those numbers, absolutely brilliant, according to the club as well, been an absolute saint off the field. But there will always just be that thing lingering in the back of the mind, the role that he played in the 2018 sandpaper scandal. Joe, what do you make of this particular piece of business from Durham?
I am, yeah, because I think he, as you say, there was everything with Sandpapergate that happened, and he kind of made almost his cricket comeback sort of more worldwide, obviously, with Durham. And he was hugely successful, let's be honest. He, as you say, scored masses of runs. For me, that's gone now. There will still be people out there who will give him stick about that. Same with Smith, same with Warner. But to me, that's gone. That's almost 3 years ago now. That people have moved on. I've moved on from that. For me, Cameron Bancroft is a great player. It can only be good that he is back in county cricket. And he's a leader as well. Obviously, he's captained Durham. He is not this year, as we will talk about in a minute. Mm-hmm. But he has captained Durham in his first spell. And that sort of time at Durham really is what got him selected for the Ashes, because there were still question marks over his place in the squad. And that got him selected. Obviously, it didn't necessarily work out for him in that series. But, as I say, a wonderful player. Still only really young as well, which people kind of forget. He's only, 25? So he's really young. Got lots of time left to play. For Australia, he would undoubtedly, in my opinion, make an international comeback, because, as I say, he's got bags of potential. And yeah, I think it's really good. And also, I feel like his game has adapted since the last time he has been, overseas player for Durham. We saw him at the end of the Big Bash. I think he opened in the final as well with Liam Livingstone, because Jason Roy picked up an injury, and he adapted really well having batted in the middle order. And for me, that shows a maturity in his game now, you know, how he can adapt to different situations. He's not opened all tournament, and then suddenly opens the batting in, arguably, well, definitely the most crucial time, you know, in the knockout games, and perform really well. So to me, it can only be a positive that he is back in county cricket. And yeah, I'm sure Durham fans will be very pleased with that, because he was, as I say, hugely successful for them.
Oh yeah, absolutely. He was a monster, wasn't he, in 2019? Yeah. And you mentioned already about the Ashes comeback. That was as a result of that magnificent start to the county championship in Division 2. So, I mean, for Durham fans out there, it is a fantastic piece of business. As I said, for neutrals, for people, of course, who remember the sandpaper game in 2018 against South Africa, that will always be tarnished.
Of course,
people
have
moved on. You have to look at the likes of Steve Smith, David Warner, Bancroft. That will always be with them for the rest of their cricket careers.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, of course, yeah. Of course, I just meant more when I think of Steve Smith now, that's not the first thing that I think of. Or when I think of Cameron Bancroft, that's not the first thing that I think of. So, you know, people, of course, are going to, as I say, give them stick and stuff for that still. But, it, you know, as I say, it's almost 3 years ago now. So, for me, generally, I've moved on. Obviously, it's still always going to be there, but generally, I've moved on.
No, fair enough. Of course, everyone's individual, and there will be individuals out there who won't have moved on. And as I said, they'll remind them very much on the boundary edges on social media for the rest of their career. But of course, that's just what it is. You don't cheat the game at the end of the day. But you alluded to there, Joe, as well, Durham's new captain. And this is really, really interesting, because remember when we spoke to Graham Clark on an upcoming podcast that'll be released very, very shortly. But we spoke to him about Scott Borthwick's return to Durham. So Scott Borthwick came back from Surrey ahead of this season, and he's been named as the captain for the county championship in 2021, which, first of all, is absolutely brilliant. You love to see local homegrown talent going on and achieving that captaincy. I mean, what a role that is for a local Durham boy. Joe, what do you make of that? What do you make of Scott Borthwick replacing Ned Eckersley as Durham's county championship captain ahead of 2021?
I think that's... No, you know, normally when somebody comes in, you don't expect them to be selected as captain. For example, if Borthwick was not, you know, Durham, like had played for Durham in the past, had Durham born and bred effectively, you know, if that wasn't his background, I don't think this would have happened. But he's, as we said, he's been at the county for, what, how many years was he there for? Off the top of my head, I honestly can't remember. But, you know, he was there for many years. Then the move to Surrey didn't necessarily work out as well as I'm sure he would have liked. He's now gone back to Durham and... not to give spoilers away, but Graham Clark said it's like he's never left. So I guess to me, that says it all. And again, not to give spoilers, but Graham Clark basically said it's great to have him back, as I'm sure every Durham player and fan will agree with. So to me, that's you know, a really good appointment for someone who's gone out and got experience at another county, learned off other people, crucially as well. He's learned off, well, I mean, he's won a county championship at Surrey, you know. He learned off Rory Burns, who's obviously an England test player. So it's only going to be beneficial to Durham. And I'm sure, you know, he's going to, hopefully for Durham fans, change their fortune in Red Bull cricket.
Well, yeah, fingers crossed for any Durham fans listening out there. But yeah, I quite like it personally. I like Scott Borthwick. We all know about the calibre of the man. He's an absolutely prolific run scorer in county championship. And he's also got a lot of experience. He's got 132 county championship appearances since his debut for Durham. So that isn't really an issue. And of course, on the field, he does act as a natural-born leader. So from a purely cricketing perspective, and of course, you've got that local boy, that homegrown talent perspective as well. But I quite like that. And of course, with Ned, it is unfortunate that he's had to step down from the captaincy. But at the same time, he's an experienced figurehead in that Durham dressing room. I don't think it'll affect
him.
And
he's still there.
His game. Exactly.
At the end of the day.
Exactly.
He's still there. And
he can still offer guidance on the field, can't he?
Definitely. And, well, that... Basically, you took the words out of my mouth. You know, he a captain is a captain, but he has other captains around him. Mm-hmm. You know, the captain is the person who makes the final decision. Look at Owen Morgan in the World Cup. He would have had Jos Buttler in his ear, Joe Root in his ear, Ben Stokes, you know, all these leaders. But obviously, he makes the final decision. But it's important. That's one of the most important things about kind of having a good team, to have all these kind of players like Eckersley, like Rushworth, like Bancroft returning. You know, effectively, you've got four captains there and just one who will make the final decision. It can only benefit Durham. But one thing I will say about Scott Borthwick is I'm worried that he may underbowl himself, because I think his bowling has definitely gone a little bit under the radar. And in April time, you don't tend to see counties really playing with a spinner. In fact, I don't know if there's any really there can't be more than three games of county championship cricket played this year during the most spin-friendly conditions in England, so during the height of summer, basically. So Borthwick may just take on that role himself. He's a very capable spinner. He got picked for England as a spinner. You know, so he's very, very capable in that role. So one thing that does kind of, not worry me, as I say, but kind of, I'm kind of thinking about with a captain like Borthwick is what if he does underball himself? Because you don't really want to appear cocky or selfish, really. That may happen. It has happened in the past, for sure. So, yeah, I guess that's something to be wary of. But I think he's going to be a great captain for Durham.
No, I think he'll be fine. And with regards to his bowling, of course, he does have that leg spin, doesn't he? Be a valuable asset for Durham heading into this season. Definitely. Of course, we'll have to wait and see how it pans out. But overall, in terms on paper, I quite like it purely because, again, he's a Durham lad. It's always nice to see local guys getting in there, becoming captain and leading their boyhood club. Must be an absolutely fantastic feeling. And of course, must be a very popular decision for Durham fans as well ahead of this season. But moving slightly more down south from Durham, we go to a county which we seem to mention every single week here on the County Cricket Podcast, and that is, of course, Leicestershire. Now, first of all, we have to just mention before this week's signing that Vion Mulder, unfortunately, has had to pull out of this season. So for all of the waxing lyrical that we did about Vion Mulder, the fact that he was this next brilliant all-rounder, and he still is, he's a fantastic all-rounder, but unfortunately we won't have the honour of seeing him in the County Championship or the Royal London One Day Cup in 2021. So as a result of that, the Running Foxes have signed Australian opener Marcus Harris as a little bit of a replacement. He will be their overseas player heading into the 2021 season in the County Championship and the Royal London One Day Cup. So, Joe, I know that you're a massive fan of Australian cricket. You know your stuff when it comes to Aussie state cricket as well. What do you make of Marcus Harris as an opener for the Running Foxes alongside the likes of Sam Evans or Hassan Azad, for example?
I think that's a great bit of business for Leicestershire. I mean, I guess bringing Marcus Harris in, as I say, he's a gun cricketer, but does kind of change the dynamic of the team. And you kind of did think, do Leicester more need an opener than they do a middle order batter? Because, I mean, I was thinking about this when I saw the news the other day. And actually, as you say, you have Evans and Azad to open the batting. What if one of those gets injured? Then who opens the batting? Or one of them goes through a bit of a bad spell? What do you do? So now you've kind of got that. I mean, Marcus Harris isn't covered. He's obviously going to play. But you've kind of got those three now where you've kind of got a little bit of reassurance. If one does have a dip in form or one does unfortunately pick up an injury, then you've kind of got a replacement ready. So yeah, it does change the dynamic of Leicestershire's team, but for me it's a positive, because not to say Vion Mulder is not a class player, but for me it benefits Leicestershire more because of what they need to fit their team. But yeah, Marcus is a great player. Unfortunately, he didn't have the best Ashes series in 2019 either. He's not really hit the heights at international cricket as people would have thought. Personally, I thought he would have been a mainstay in Australia's top order for now, for the next few years. But unfortunately, he's not. He has just literally today scored 100, which I guess is good timing for Victoria. So yeah, I guess that's that can only be seen as a positive. And as I said, to me, this is purely for what Leicestershire need, in my opinion, in their side, a better signing than Vion Mulder, because he fits where Leicestershire need to improve. That's what I personally think. But again, it's one of those, isn't it, where you need to debate. And not to say Vion Mulder would not have benefited Leicester, because he massively would have. But to me, Marcus Harris is a more beneficial signing in terms of where they can improve.
That's interesting. That's all I'll say, because you mentioned there about Sam Evans and Hassan Azad. Of course, they were the openers in last year's Bob Willis Trophy. When Marcus Harris comes into the team, who gets dropped?
Well, I think you would have to probably look at dropping Sam Evans just because of the season of the 2019 Hassan Azad had. You know, you kind of still count 2020 because it was still a cricket season, but don't count it as much as 2019 because it was so different. And Hassan Azad scored 1,000 runs in 2019, had a great year. Personally, I think should have gone on a Lions tour that winter. Was unlucky, in my opinion, to miss out. And as I say, he's kind of a little bit more experienced than Sam Evans. And for me, that dynamic at the top of the order of Azad and Harris. Harris is someone who is a lot more aggressive than Azard. So Azard can kind of just sit in there and eat up deliveries. Well, not eat up deliveries, actually. That's probably the wrong phrase there. Just, you know, sort of build his innings more slowly, whereas Harris can kind of accelerate a little bit. So for me, that's going to add a good dynamic to Leicester's top order.
Fair comment there. Yeah, I'd agree. I think they'll go Harris and Azard. The only thing that you would say there, two left-handers.
Yeah,
so right
yeah,
arm is coming in around the wicket. There could be a potential weakness there. Of course, Harris, that was evident when he came up against Jofra Archer in the Ashes. So we'll have to wait and see how that actually pans out. But in terms of the signing of Harris, brilliant. In terms of the unfortunate, well, omission of Vian Mulder, I think that's going to leave a massive, massive hole as well. But with that being said, they still have got time to maybe potentially recruit someone else. So that
definitely. And that's the thing. The good thing about cricket is there's no transfer window.
True.
So you can sign, if to be fair, totally counteracting my point about lack of openers. If one of the openers did get an injury, they could just sign someone. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that renders my point useless. But, I guess that's one of the beauties of cricket, or counter cricket, is that there is no transfer window. You can sign someone whenever.
Very, very true. And, of course, loans as well, if needed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it should be interesting. But, yeah, we'll have to wait and see, of course. Nico and Jarv, they always seem to have something up their sleeve, don't they? Down at Upton Steel Grace Road. So, who knows? There could be a replacement on their way for Vian Mulder. But, yeah, I do feel a little bit disappointed that we won't get to see him. But with that being said, he's
definitely
going to be playing for the Proteas. So, I mean...
Definitely, yeah. And you never know. He might get another go in county cricket one day. To be honest, I'm sure he will. Whether that's with Leicester or another county, who knows? But... He will almost certainly get another chance to play in county cricket. So,
100%. He's a very, very talented and gifted all-rounder. And still only mid-20s as well. So, got plenty of time to still see Vian in county cricket in the future. But moving away from Leicestershire then, let's go on to one of their North Group rivals. And, of course, Warwickshire's biggest rival as well, Worcestershire. You all know me. I'm a big Warwickshire fan. But I have to admit, this is a fantastic piece of business from the Pairs. Yeah. It really is. They have signed Ben Dwarshus, the Sydney Sixers left-arm seamer, for the 2021 T20 Blast. Now, for those who don't know Ben Dwarshus, he is an absolute wicket-taking machine. So in terms of the way in which he operates, I've already mentioned the left arm. He has that left-arm angle, gets some beautiful lateral movement in towards right-handers. And he is a real gun seamer in overs 1-6. He's a bona fide power play wicket-taking option. So for me, brilliant, brilliant signing. You look back to 2020, we mentioned a little bit with Ed Barnard with regards to this. The Rapids at times were a little bit toothless. They didn't really take many early wickets. They allowed partnerships to formulate and develop, and that really put them on the back foot. Whereas now you've got Ben Dwarshus, who had an absolutely fantastic big bash in 2020 as the second leading wicket taker in the entire tournament, behind only Jai Richardson. He took 24 wickets at 16.79. The only thing that I would say, his economy rate was 8.85. But you have to remember, he's operating with the new ball and the old ball. He operates similarly to Wayne Parnell, who we'll discuss in due course on today's podcast. But for me, I think this is a really, really clever signing. It's a shrewd signing from the Rapids. And I feel like Ben Dwarshus, he's gone under the radar. He is one of the Big Bash's leading all-time wicket takers. As I said, he's an absolute weapon with the new ball as well. Joe, what do you make of this? What do you make of the prospect of facing Ben Dwarshus, for example, for Lancs or for Warwickshire, Yorkshire? How much of an asset will he be for the Rapids heading into this year's Blast?
Well, I guess Lancs have got an advantage because Livingston's played against him before. So I guess Lancs immediately have an advantage. But genuinely, it is a great signing. As you say, kind of gone under the radar. I thought would have had more international opportunities, actually, certainly in T20 cricket, because... I mean, Australia just went out to New Zealand with a arguably weakened squad. And for me, I thought he could have, you know, travelled. Unfortunately, didn't. I was surprised at that, actually, because of his, you know, how prolific he is in T20 cricket. And I think something that most counties, in fact, probably most teams, T20 teams around the world, are almost worried about is using their best bowlers in the power play, like using too many overs. And I often feel that can hinder teams. Now, Ben Dwarshus, his skill is absolutely similar to Jason Berendorf. Their skills are absolutely 100% with the new ball and the power play. You know what you're going to get. You know you're going to get some good swing with them and some good pace with them. So I think that will only benefit Worcester if they know they've got three guaranteed overs in the power play of a genuine wicket taker in Ben Dwarshus. then they've got obviously one later whenever they need it. That's not going to affect their team too much with the other bowlers that they have. The likes of Pat Brown, of course, can bowl at the death. You could argue he bowls his four in a row, finishing at the 19th or the 20th over. So I think that adds a real nice balance to Worcestershire's team, actually. And yeah, as you say, his economy rate is a little bit high at almost nine and over. But again, as you said, you're going to get that. He's bowling in the power play mainly. If you think about some of the people he bowled to in the power play, you know, he bowled to Liam Livingston. He bowled to Alex Hales. So, you know, he's bowling to some powerful hitters right throughout the tournament. Marcus Stoinis. So this, I mean, the Spice Man, Andre Fletcher, he's not someone you want to bowl to in the power play. So there are some big hitters that he's bowling to there in the Big Bash. So I guess that's not really because he's a bad bowler, that high economy rate. That's just because he's bowling to exceptional players.
Mm. True. And another thing with Ben Dwarshus, he doesn't rely on the extra pace and bounce of Australian wickets. So in that way, I actually do think, he'll adapt fine. He may have a couple of shaky games at the start, but I think he'll get into the...
But that happens, though. That happens. You see that with pretty much every overseas player, regardless of where you're playing. You know, you could find tons of examples in the IPL. And it's harsher in the IPL. You're more likely to get dropped because there's so many overseas players. You know, you can find tons of examples where the best players have shaky... I mean, everyone has a bad game, but especially adapting to new conditions, you find so many examples of that. So, yeah, I think that honestly, that is a great signing. I think he will be up there with the leading wicket takers, especially if Worcester to go far in this year's T20. I think he could be up there with one of the leading wicket takers in the competition.
A bold call from yourself, Joe. Of course, we'll find that out in due course as the T20 Blast gets underway later on this summer, which of course promises to be absolutely fantastic. But moving on to our final piece of news from the North Group for this week, we go to Northants. And I alluded to it a little bit earlier, Wayne Parnell is back in county cricket yet again. This will be the fifth county that he's played for now, because Northants have signed him for the 2021 season as their second overseas player alongside Mohammed Nabi. So, Joe, I know that you have quite a bit to talk about this because you mentioned it as soon as Wayne Parnell actually made the move. So what do you think of this piece of business from the Steelbacks? I mean, it's an absolute coup, isn't it?
Oh, it is a great signing. It really is. For me, one of the things one of the first things that springs to my mind when I think of Wayne Parnell is that last over he bowled to Ben Duckett in the 2019 semi-final, and he defended one off the last ball and that sent Worcester through. And it was a good delivery. It was a really, really good delivery. And sure, you can argue Ben Duckett, maybe that wasn't his best innings, but focusing on Wayne Parnell, that was just a brilliant bowling performance. And I think a lot of people kind of forget he has had a lot of international experience. He's played a lot of cricket for the Proteas. He's played in England in the 2009 World T20, didn't he? That was a great South Africa team, by the way. Unfortunately, they didn't really kick on that much. But you know, he has played a lot of cricket. That can only be a benefit for Northants and Worcestershire fans. As much as Dwarshus is a great signing, they've lost a genuine all-rounder. Or a genuine bowling all-rounder there, because Parnell can also absolutely nail the cricket ball. You know, he's got a great hitting ability, and I kind of don't think Worcester utilised that as much as they could have done. So, yeah, Northants fans will probably be hoping that they don't make the same mistake. But it is a great sign, and as you say, this is his fifth county now. He's played all over the country. He's played in England, as I say, for the Proteas. He knows the conditions really, really well, probably as well as he knows the conditions out in South Africa. So it is such a good signing for me. It really is.
It is, yeah. Because he's a certified match winner in county cricket, not just cricket in general or franchise, but he's been there and done it in county cricket. Of course, part of the 2018 Worcestershire team, which went on to win the T20 Blast. So for me, again, I cannot believe that they actually managed to pull it off. And I don't think even Northants could by the club statement either. They said as soon as he emerged on the market, they went straight in for him. And I'm not surprised.
That's the thing. It wouldn't surprise me if... Let's put it this way, I wouldn't have turned him down at Lancs. I'm sure you would have been happy if you signed for Warwickshire.
We have enough seamers, to be fair.
You can never have... I mean, it's Wayne Parnell, you know, as we've said how good he is. You can never have too many class seamers, and as competition. And I'm sure there were so many counties in for him, like Northants, they won the race, effectively.
True. And the other thing about Wayne Parnell, which I could not believe, because you mentioned there about 2009, that's when he first came into county cricket as well, with Kent. He's only 31. I thought he was about mid-30s. He's 31 years of age. Like, he's pretty much in the peak of his powers right now. So that is very, very interesting. And yeah, for me, great, great signing. Really, really good signing. I couldn't believe that when they announced that.
It was outrageous. Because nobody really knew what was going to happen with Parnell.
True.
Personally, I thought he was going to go back to Worcester, but it kind of took a bit of time. Obviously, he's ended up at Northants, and no one really knew what was going to happen with him. And everyone, certainly in the North group, and in the South group, knows what he's about. Certainly more recently, everyone in the North group will know what he's about. There's no surprises, I guess, in that element. But when you've got a player like that, who's that class, it doesn't matter whether you've seen him play a million times. He's still going to be an exceptional player and exceptionally fierce competitor, really.
Yeah, it's a good signing. I must admit, that is a very, very good signing from the Steelbacks. As I said, very shrewd. It's a very clever one. And again, a guy who will be back in county cricket. And it's nice to see. It's nice to see Wayne Parnell back. And of course, with the celebrations and the exuberance and enthusiasm, it'll be very, very interesting to see in 2021. But yeah, that is pretty much it from the North group. So let's move down to the South group now. And we'll start in Wales. We'll start with Glamorgan because Chris Cook has signed a 2-year extension with the Welsh County. So, Joe, what do you make of this? Of course, Chris Cook, a fantastic batsman. What do you make of this particular piece of business from Glamorgan to tie down the future of their club captain?
A great piece of business again, you know, hugely experienced cricketer, played, you know, hundreds and hundreds of games across all formats. And as you say, Glamorgan's captain, they've got another leader in their dressing room. You know, it's similar to what I said before with Borthwick, just kind of keeping that leadership group compact. And, you know, one of the best things about having a guy like that in the dressing room, similar to Lanx, with Dane Vilas, is the experience as a leader that they bring that can rub off on the younger players. And, you know, Glamorgan actually have quite a young squad, relatively young squad. And his leadership and his experience and his knowledge can rub off onto some of their younger players. And if you think in 5, 6, 7 years time, you know, they will have ready-made leaders, similar, as I say, with Lanx. I guess we're fortunate in that sense. So, yeah, it's a great signing, contract extension. And you always want your club captain to stay. He is staying, so you can't really knock it.
No, of course not. And just looking at his first-class stats as well, he's got 4,772 first-class runs at 35.61, 400s as well. And he just has been a bit of a stalwart for Glamorgan, an excellent captain, good leader, fantastic keeper as well behind the stumps. And as I said, he is a guy who can win matches for the Welsh County. So for me personally, if we're taking into account all three formats, wonderful, wonderful piece of business from Glamorgan. So yeah, I think Glamorgan fans will be pretty happy with seeing Cookie back down at Sapphire Gardens for 2021 and of course beyond that. So moving on from Glamorgan then, let's go slightly more east. Let's go down to Kent because Barbadian seamer Miguel Cummins has signed for the Southeastern team ahead of the 2021 County Championship. So, Joe, what do you make of this particular piece of business? Of course, in the 2020 Bob Willis Trophy, took 13 wickets in 3 appearances for Middlesex, which included a 5-62, funnily enough, against Kent at the Spitfire Ground in August. So what do you make of the return of Miguel Cummins to the county circuit?
I think it's a good signing. I don't think it's not. I mean, he obviously had a good Bob Willis Trophy, but it's not a signing that really wows me personally. I think there are better seamers out there, personally. And also, Miguel Cummins has had a lot of injury problems, which I think could maybe hamper his time with Kent, which obviously Kent fans and obviously Kent setup would not want. But not to take anything away from Miguel, I think he's a very, very good cricketer. And as you say, he had a great Bob Willis Trophy, just 3 matches and he's taking 13 wickets. That's pretty good going, to be fair. And ironically, a 5 against Kent, as you say, which I mean, it's almost like he knew. Maybe that's why they decided to sign him. Maybe that's kind of what they judged it off. I mean, that probably helped a lot. But yeah, as I say, I don't think it's not a signing that really wows me. But it's not a signing that I don't think is good. I still think it's a good signing, but it's not an incredible one, you know. We'll move on to another West Indian fast bowler shortly, who I think personally is a better signing. But yeah, as I say, you can't really knock Kent. It's still a solid signing, but hopefully for them he can perform and stay fit as well, because as I say, has been hampered with injuries, unfortunately.
True, very, very true. But when he's been fully fit, of course, he has played for the West Indies. I remember watching in 2017, funnily enough, at the day-night match at Edgbaston, and overall, 231 first-class wickets at 25.71. So he has the pedigree. It's just a case of keeping him fully fit. And Joe, just out of interest, who would you have gone with if you had a chance to be down at Kent? Who would you say on the seamers market, per se, would you have chosen if you had the choice?
Well, a lot of it depends on availability, of course, and how long you can wait. So I think a lot of the top seamers have now gone to the IPL. I think of the likes of Kigiso Rabada, who Kent have obviously had in the past. Maybe he's not necessarily attainable anymore due to his high international demand. But someone of that calibre, for me, is what Kent need, or who Kent need, to really push their side over to the almost to the next level almost of that. Because Kent are a solid Red Bull side. They're a very, very good Red Bull side, almost to that Essex and Somerset benchmark, almost like pushing that. So as I say, I think Miguel Cummins is a very, very good cricketer, and I don't like not rate him. It's more, can he stay fit? And obviously you're always going to have that concern with the fast bowler. Funnily enough, the fast bowler who I just mentioned, who's joined another county in the South, has also had a lot of injury problems. But again, you know, there are, for me, other players on the market, potentially. I've not seen the market in that in depth, I'll be honest. But other players around who I think maybe were better options for Kent. As I say, someone along the lines of Rabada, who now has an IPL deal, or also had an IPL deal anyway. But someone along those lines who has also played for Kent in the past, maybe could have been a better option. But as I say, Miguel Cummins, still a class bowler. Just hopefully for them, he can stay fit.
Well, fair enough, Joe. Of course, we're all entitled to our own different opinions, aren't we? I mean, that's completely valid. And yeah, of course, Rabada would have been fantastic, but there's just no chance he could have played. You mentioned with the IPL and then in the summer.
Well, that's the thing. So high international demand.
Exactly.
In the summer, he's playing in the 100 as well. But not necessarily Rabada, someone of that calibre, who maybe is exclusively a Red Bull cricketer. You know, perhaps. But they've gone with Cummins. Hopefully it works out for them.
Oh yeah, fingers crossed. Wish Miguel the very, very best of luck down at the Spitfire Ground. And just before we go on to Surrey, of course, because we have alluded to him enough about Kemar Roach. But yeah, Daniel Bell-Drummond has also replaced Joe Denley as Kent's vice-captain. So we don't really need to go into ridiculous detail here, but I just think it's nice because Deeb has been down at Kent since he was 7 years of age. So for him to have the opportunity, of course, he is Sam Billings' second in command, basically. So if Billings is with England, Daniel Bell-Drummond
will get a fair amount of chance.
Yeah, exactly. He can step in. Captain.
Definitely.
100%.
It is a sad day, though, for those Joe Denley fans.
No, it's not, because it's Denley's birthday.
Denley's birthday. That is
35.
True.
Happy that is birthday, true. Dennis. But
yeah, that is true.
No, I think that's quite nice for Daniel Bell-Drummond. And definitely.
Oh, definitely.
100%.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt.
Absolutely. So yeah, Joe, I think we mentioned him enough. I think it's time that we go on down to the Oval because Kemar Roach has joined Surrey for the first seven games of the 2021 County Championship. So for those who don't know, Kemar is actually the West Indies' eighth leading test wicket taker of all time with a fantastic tally of 205 career test wickets. So Joe, what do you make of this particular piece of business? We all know what Kemar Roach is capable of, has fantastic control with the new ball, takes wickets in absolute bunches. He's a prolific wicket taker in both domestic and international cricket. How big of an addition and an asset will Kemar Roach be to that Surrey attack heading into this year's County Championship?
Massive. You know, Surrey will have a lot of bowlers away. Well, two main bowlers away on IPL duty. Obviously, Sam Curran and Tom Curran. Although Tom Curran hasn't actually played that much Red Bull cricket, it's still an option. They'll both be away on IPL duty. And Kemar Roach is such a good bowler. 205 test wickets. He's just 31 from overtaking Gary Sobers now in their all-time test wicket-taking list for the West Indies. And just his ability to swing the new ball. He's obviously lost a yard of pace as he's got older. But, you know, his ability to swing the new ball is, you know, just going to be key for Surrey, in my opinion. It really is. And he will add a really interesting dynamic. You've got the skiddy, slingy nature, really, of Kemar Roach, alongside the likes of Jamie Overton, Rhys Topley. So, you know, you've got these options now. Surrey have these options, these more senior bowlers. And actually, Roach is only 32. People, for me, I thought Roach was a little bit older than that. I thought he was, 35, 36. So he's got years left of him. certainly in domestic cricket around the world, and probably in Test cricket as well, let's be honest. And the partnership that he's formed with Shannon Gabriel for the West Indies has been really good over the last few years. And now Surrey will be hoping he can form a similar partnership with their bowlers. But as I say, great bowler. You know, he just, for me, seems to have a really positive effect on every team he has. Brings a lot of energy to his fielding or to the field. And he brings a lot of energy to the to his bowling. Doesn't really, you don't really ever see Kemal Roach kind of, not give up, but almost back down almost. You don't really ever see him give less than 100%. So he's a great bowler. Very, very good signing. And Surrey have a scarily good bowling attack now, actually.
They do indeed, yeah. Of course they do. It's Surrey. I mean, and this is a very, very almost profound question, Joe, or it might be a difficult one. But do you think that Kemal Roach, for those first seven games, I know they are completely different bowlers, but in terms of taking wickets, being that X-factor strike bowler, do you think that Kemal Roach can fill the void left behind by Mornay Morkel?
Well, I think that's a very interesting question. As you said, they're totally different bowlers.
Oh, yeah, completely.
that's such a hard question because there's so many different ways you could look at this. And Mornay's international record speaks for itself. He's obviously taken more test wickets than Kemal Roach, but that is because Roach plays for a nation who recently hasn't actually played as much test cricket as South Africa. And also Roach has had a lot more injuries. But in terms of for those seven games, I don't see any reason why he can't. I don't see any reason why he can't take 25 wickets in those seven games, 30 wickets. I really don't, because as I say, he's that kind of bowler. We've seen him take wickets in England before for the West Indies. He's literally played here last summer and took wickets. So, you know, I think he passed 200 last summer, didn't he? Was it Old Trafford he passed 200? So a great milestone, and that can only help bowlers' confidences, surely. So I don't see any reason why he can't, for those seven games, fill the void left by Morkel. And as I say, he will have great seamers to almost bounce off of. The likes of Overson, as I say, Topley. So I don't see any reason why he can't.
No, fair enough. That is a fair comment. And you mentioned about seven games. I did actually find this interesting. I brought up a stat from 2011 when he played for Worcestershire. That was his first ever stint, and only actually before this Surrey stint. That was his only time in county cricket. He only played four games and he took 14 wickets.
There you go. There's no reason why he can't take 25, maybe, as I say, maybe 30 wickets. There's no reason. Because as,
well, you think a decade on, he was only 21.
Well, yeah.
22 at that stage.
Yeah, and you know what he's lost in pace, because that's just naturally going to happen. You lose pace as you get older. He's probably, well, definitely gained in experience and skill. His ability to swing the ball has increased. A great signing, in my opinion.
Yeah, 100%. I'd argue that it's probably the standout signing of this week's news. Him and Mohammed Abbas, who we'll talk about in due course as well. But before we talk about Mohammed Abbas and Hampshire, of course, who will be the final county that we look at for this week's county news, just one final piece of business from Surrey. And it's pretty big, actually, because it's three pretty talismanic players down at the Oval. But Sam Curran, Tom Curran and Rhys Topley have all signed extensions with the Brown Caps. Unfortunately, Surrey didn't actually disclose how many years it was, so it could be 1 year extensions, 2 year, could be five for all that we know with Sam Curran. But yeah, unfortunately, Surrey haven't released that information just yet. But I don't really think we need to go into too much more detail about these three. We all know what they're capable of. Of course, all three England bowlers, all three are in India right now, with Sam Curran in particular being so, so impressive in the IPL, Tom being an absolute asset for Surrey in the T20 Blast, and Rhys Topley again has been fantastic ever since moving to Surrey last season. So yeah, overall, again, decent business from Surrey, tying down three major players, three major components of their bowling attack. So yeah, we don't really need to touch much more upon that, do we, Joe?
Ah, class.
Exactly. So let's move on to our final pieces of county news for this week. And I did just allude to it, but Mohammed Abbas, how fantastic is this to see him back in county cricket? The Pakistani seamer has signed for Hampshire for the first 2 months of the county championship. So Joe, again, we know what Mohammed Abbas is capable of. If you remember back in 2018, he absolutely tore through us at Lord's with that beautiful line and length, gets beautiful shape, has a real lethal in-swinger, which traps batsmen on their crease and brings the LBW into play. What do you make of this particular piece of business? Because I'm looking at Hampshire's attack. Abbott, Abbas, Keith Barker. Wow. It's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very, very good attack. And it really fits kind of what you need. Like, it's a, dynamically a very, very good red ball attack. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got the pace and balance of Abbott, who can also swing the ball. You've got the left arm angle of Barker, who can also swing the ball. And you've got the, well, he's not quick by any means, but you've got the guile of of Mohamed Abbas. And he's played a lot of cricket at the Aegeus Bowl in the last sort of 12 months. So he knows the conditions really well. That can only be a positive. And as you say, what an attack that is. It's such a good attack. And if you think of Mason Crane as well, backing that up in the spin department, again, it's such a good attack for Hampshire. It's going to be so fascinating to see. And of course, Ian Holland as well. Can't forget him. You know, he's going to only add to that as well. So, I mean, Hampshire, they have a very, very good side. And you feel like they're the team, or in my opinion, they are the team closest to almost reaching that Essex and Somerset benchmark at the moment. I can't really put Lancs up there, can I? But I would like to, but I can't really justify that. But yeah, I think Hampshire are probably the team closest to knocking those two off their perch. And the addition of Abbas for the first, I'd say, 2 months is just going to be crucial, in my opinion.
Absolutely. It is a fantastic piece of business. Again, a real big, big signing. It really is fantastic piece of business by Hampshire. And just looking at that group of death, as we call it here on the County Cricket Podcast, Group 2, their first game is against Leicestershire. That is going to be absolutely nightmarish for Harris, Azad, Sam Evans, whoever's opening up the top of the order for the Foxes. They've got an absolute challenge on their hands, to say the least. But just our final piece of county news before we head into today's discussion, really, about England versus India. Sam Northeast has signed an extension with Hampshire until the end of the 2022 season. So again, we're not going to go into too much detail with regards to Sam Northeast. We all know what he's capable of. He's a fantastic county batsman. And yes, pretty good week for Hampshire fans. I imagine that Hampshire fans will be pretty happy heading into the starting weeks of the county championship, which is all set to get underway in around 23 days' time. But yeah, congratulations to Sam. And of course, it'll be nice to see him down at the Aegeus Bowl until at least the end of the 2022 season. But that does bring our county news wrap-up pretty much to an end. It's been a long one this week, hasn't it, Joe?
Yeah, there's been a lot of news, surprisingly, actually, considering you don't really see this much during, less than a month out from the start of the season. It's been a lot.
Correct. When do you think the Lancs will make their next move?
Will Lancs ever make their next move? I mean, I'm still waiting for them to, maybe they're just not announcing that they've honoured Maxwell's contracts because it's common knowledge, or maybe just I don't know. I've given up at this point. Anything now is just an added bonus, the way I see it.
Well, for your sakes, mate, I hope that we get to talk about Lancs in the next weekly wrap-up, because that's been a while.
So do
hasn't
I.
It? When was the last time you mentioned him? With Dane Villas' extension?
Yeah, or maybe when Wells and Blatherwick signed. I think it probably would have been Dane's extension. Yeah.
It's been a while.
it's been months. You know, it actually really, it's quite confusing, really. The lack of business done, you know, two signings when really realistically we can strengthen the squad. But yeah, that's how it is. Hopefully we can talk about it soon.
Exactly. Yeah. Keep your fingers crossed and keep up the faith, Lancs fans. Fingers crossed. We'll have some more business to report on heading into next week's weekly wrap up. But yeah, Joe, I say that just before we end today's podcast, then we talk a bit about England, because today was absolutely fantastic, wasn't it, from the men in red. 8-wicket victory, 10 balls left. Mentioned it right at the beginning of the podcast, Joss Butler, 83 and out from 52 deliveries. He was absolutely sensational. But Joe, I just wanted to ask you a pretty difficult question here, actually. Do you think that Ben Stokes should be in the England team heading into the T20 World Cup? Yes or no? What are your thoughts on Ben Stokes' place in that England side ahead of that major tournament?
Not picking Ben Stokes would be ridiculous. It would be so stupid, in my opinion. Ben Stokes is one of the best cricketers in the world. He's one of the best multi-format cricketers in the world. You know, not picking him would be just... it would be the worst decision. You know, forget all this rotation policy in Test cricket. Forget all that, which I also think is nonsense. You pick your best team. Forget all that for a second. This would be the worst decision the England board would make, or the England selectors will make, to not pick Stokes. You know, he's England's best multi-format cricketer. Like, that's a fact. You could argue Root is up there, but for some reason they don't even put him in the squad. So you can't even make that case. Now, I guess the question is, where does he bat? He got 100 opening the batting in the IPL for the Royals. Just, you could easily make a case for putting Ben Stokes at the top of the order, the same case you can for opening the batting with Joss Butler. We've basically seen the Royals do the opposite of what England do, where Stokes opens and Butler goes in the middle order. Now, personally, I don't believe, as I said at the start, Butler should open. I also don't believe Stokes should open. I believe that you can fit Butler in anywhere because he can adapt anywhere.
Out of interest, who would you open with then?
Oh, Roy and Bairstow every day of the week.
Like, really? Without a doubt. Even after Bairstow's been so prolific at four?
But I don't think Johnny's a number four, really.
But he's a spin hitter.
But we're playing in India. So
he did the exact same role in South Africa.
Yeah, but true. But a lot of teams open with spin in India. Not to say that Joss is not a great hitter of spin, because he is. But personally, I would go with. Personally, I would go with Roy and Bairstow opening. Also, I think that is the partnership that won England. Not just that alone, but that was one of the main reasons England won the 50-over World Cup. So many transferable skills from white ball cricket from 50-over cricket to T20 cricket. To me, why would you, want to change that? I was thinking before, you could pretty much play the same team that they won the 50-over World Cup with in the World T20 and win it. With the exception of a few players, of course, Jordan will play, probably Milan will play. Plunkett obviously wouldn't play because he's been for some reason frozen out. As I say, there's so many different options for England. You think of the likes of, as I say, Joe Root can't even get a look in the squad. Liam Livingstone, who for me could make a strong case for playing, is sitting on the sideline. Moeen Ali, likewise, sitting on the sidelines. Sam Billings, who had a great summer and also a great Big Bash, sitting on the sidelines, has a chance in the IPL. Now, for me, the IPL is going to tell a lot of, a lot of stories, because it is being played, obviously, in the country where the World T20 is. So that could decide a lot for me. If Darwin Milan sugars in the IPL and someone else, Moeen Ali, let's say, plays really well, then you could make that case. You could make the case that actually Milan misses out. Now, whether or not they do that, I don't know. But it is very interesting, and it's a debate you could have for days. Although I do think most of the bowlers pick themselves. I think it's the batting where the debate really is.
Well, yeah, because at the moment, county cricket is producing an absolute embarrassment of riches. In regards to especially top-order batsmen, and Joe, you mentioned there about Ben Stokes. If you wouldn't open with him, where would you bat him?
The way I see Ben Stokes is as a floater. You could also make the same case for Butler. But the way although he's not batted well at all in the series, although I think he's only batted once, could even make the same case for Sam Curran as a floater, maybe in a few years to come. Maybe not right now, while you've still got Stokes, but you could definitely make that case. If England are, I don't know, 150 for two with five overs to go, do you send Ben Stokes and just tell him to hit it as hard as he can? Or if they're 100 for one of 10 overs, why send Milan in when you could send Stokes in? Milan is a great player, but eats up a lot of deliveries at the start of his innings. Stokes won't mess about, will he? So again, I think that's the beauty of this England T20 side, is you can be so versatile and flexible with how you play it, that it just, to me, feels like, I mean, England, they are the number one ranked side in the world. To me, feels like England are the favourites for the World T20, especially considering they're now showing they actually can beat India. In India, surely they can beat anyone else in India, as long as they bat second.
Yeah, I mean, that is going to be a massive, massive fact heading into this year's tournament. But just for yourself, Joe, and of course the listeners, I just want to play a bit of devil's advocate, because we mentioned about Ben Stokes and reputation, and I came across this magnificent piece of analysis from Dan Weston, of course, a former guest here on the County Cricket podcast. And he really took a deep dive at Ben Stokes's stats. And you mentioned there about he's penciled in. He's a fantastic player, and he is in Test and ODI. I can't deny that. But in T20, I'm looking at these stats. He has a batting average of 31. This is since the 1st of January 2019. A 136 strike rate, which for a guy batting at six, isn't amazing. I'm going to be honest.
But then should he even be batting at six?
But where would you put him? That's the problem, because you've got a set opening duo in Roy and Bairstow. Are you going to drop Darren Millan, who's the number one ranked T20i batsman in the world, a deserving T20i batsman, has done absolutely nothing wrong in an England shirt, was one of our players of the series in South Africa. Are we just going to discard him after all he's done in an England shirt? And at number four, we've got Johnny Bairstow. You can't put him as a finisher. He's not a finisher. So where does Ben Stokes bat? How do we get the best out of Ben Stokes when he can't play in the top four? As you mentioned in the IPL, for example, he's got two IPL hundreds, one of them opening, one of them batting at five, but both of those came when he batted in the power play. Where on earth do we put him?
Do you take the hit on a guy like Millan, who eats up deliveries, as I say, and go for
the first 20? This is the thing. The first 20, he has a 120 strike rate around that. After the first 20, it goes up to 188. He makes up for it.
If you give Stokes 20 balls, that's all he needs to get, you know, 40, 50 runs potentially, depending on how obviously he comes off on the day. If you give Stokes those deliveries, he can score perhaps triple the amount of runs Millan can score in that time. And then, you know, if you do decide to maybe drop Millan or rotate the side around, you could argue you could bring Moeen Ali in, you could bring Tom Curran in, you could bring Sam Billings in. And then that just adds more firepower down the bottom of the order. Because actually, you could argue every single player in the side today, maybe with the exception of Mark Wood, can actually bat very capably. I mean, Mark Wood was, to be fair, nailing it in in South Africa in that test series a few years ago. So you could make a case of actually England could just go down the route of, we're just going to send everybody out to try and hit it a million miles an hour and see what happens. Maybe, look, if they win the next T20, why not experiment? That's the way I see it. Because the series is won and they can only learn from losing. Again, that's the way I view it. You can only look at Kohli today. He said in his toss interview, we want to be able to, we wanted to bowl first, but we're okay defending because it's something we want to work on and improve on. And that is literally their home country and they struggle there. So, you know, or struggle with the aspects there. So why not experiment? You can only learn from losing in this series, in my opinion.
Right. But going back to the original question, where does Ben Stokes bat?
Yeah, I've drifted. As I said, a floater. He's a floater for me. Ben Stokes is carded wherever Sky Sports card him. And if he needs to come in at four,
but I have
then
a question
for you. The other one comes in at four.
And again, this isn't suggesting anything, just merely playing devil's advocate, but just this is purely statistically speaking. If Ben Stokes has to bat at six, okay, maybe potentially could move up to five. Maybe that could be something England explore. Owen Morgan did bat at six in the IPL for Kolkata. But if you're going to bat Ben Stokes at six, as I said, as a 136 strike rate, we mentioned about him coming in at the death, Joe. His strike is still only 157, which isn't bad by any means. But you compare this to the likes of bona fide finishers. Andre Russell has over 200. Hardik Pandya has 190. Colin de Grondam has a 191 as well. So what role is he playing in the team? What role is Ben Stokes? What niche is he actually playing in the T20 World Cup? Would it not be better for England to actually get another finisher in there? A Liam Livingstone, for example. A Moeen Ali.
Not a finisher. Again, that's the thing. Liam Livingstone has been used wrong by England, in my opinion. But obviously, he's not played for years. But when he did, he was batting in the middle order. Liam Livingstone's an opener. At the start of the Big Bash, he batted, I can't remember if it was three or four, but didn't bat in the power play and barely got any runs. Then they moved him up the order and he finishes one of the best batsmen in the tournament. So England have too many top order batsmen.
Yeah.
I would like to ask you this, though. You've reeled off finishers, strike rates there. Is Joss Butler not a finisher? Would you not say he's a finisher?
The difference with Joss, though, and we've seen this time and time again, we saw it against Australia at the Rose Bowl last year, we saw it in South Africa, we saw it for Rajasthan, we've seen it here today in Ahmedabad. The guy's that versatile, he can do both. But if you want to have, let's face it, Joss Butler is one of England's greatest ever white ball batsmen.
Oh, without a doubt.
Up there with Kevin Peterson, Owen Morgan, he is one of the best without a shadow of a doubt. And I know it's cliche, but you want your best T20 batsman, a bit like Pakistan do with Babar. You want these guys facing potentially as many deliveries as possible. He's not someone like Jason Roy who needs to go out there and smash it from ball one. Yes, he does. He has that little air of innovation about his game and enterprise, Mr. 360, as we call him. But the fact with Joss Butler, he can bat through in innings. He is good enough. He showed that tonight. He took the responsibility upon his shoulders and produced a match-winning 83 not out. So for me, again, and this is the problem because we have so many top-order batsmen. We really do. And it's both a blessing and a curse, isn't it? Because it makes that top six so, so difficult. Because we even have middle-order batsmen who can come in. But at the same time, are you willing to sacrifice that real 100-mile-an-hour start? Two guys who have really, in my opinion, cemented their places at the top. They deserve it. They've been brilliant for the past three series. Do you sacrifice Joss Butler's place there because he can also finish? What's your thoughts on that, Joe?
Again, it's a very interesting debate. And you mentioned you want your best player to face the most balls. So does that mean Darwin Milan should not open? But he's the best player in the world, technically. Does that mean he should not open? If you want your genuine... But they're still not. But he could only face 119 balls. That's still not as many balls as he could. What if off that one ball he hit a boundary and he's getting less runs? So you know, if you want your best player to be facing as many balls as possible, Darwin Milan should open. And you could argue, alongside Joss Butler. And then is Jason Roy one of your best players? No, so he moves down the order. Is Owen Morgan one of your best players? Yes, so he goes up to three. If that's your argument, then. Again, I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you, but I'm just suggesting, you know, you could then that changes the whole dynamic of a cricket team, because if you want your best, a T20 team, because if you want your best players, look at RCB. Would you want De Villiers to open the batting?
No, but what about Kohli?
So Kohli and De Villiers are RCB's best players. So if those two open the batting, would you be happy with that?
There's one difference though, because we're talking here in theory. With regards to De Villiers. De Villiers isn't a specialist opener. Milan isn't a specialist opener either. They're specialist three and fours. But Butler and Stokes are versatile enough to be both. But Joss Butler has actually cemented himself as an opener. That's the difference.
But has Stokes been given a
specialist finisher? Well, no, he hasn't. But Ben Stokes is there as an all-rounder. And we're looking at his stats. I haven't even mentioned his bowling stats just yet. But since 2019, since January, he's got an overall economy rate of 10. At the end of the death, 12.2 runs and over. In the power play, 13.1 runs and over. Basically, England's role for Ben Stokes is to be a power hitter, which for the time being, or at least since 2019, hasn't been done to the extent of Moeen Ali, for example. His strike rate is 168, which is 11 more than Ben Stokes's. And even then, we're just going to get a couple of overs out of him in the middle overs. He's going for 8.6 and over, and that's a strike rate of 19. That's what I'm saying. Ben Stokes is one of the best players on the planet, but we can't utilise him correctly. So this is a genuine question now, not just for yourself, Joe, but for anyone out there. How do we get the best out of Ben Stokes? He's never got a T20 century. He hasn't even got a half century in T20 international cricket, which is absolutely crazy. How do we get the best out of one of the world's best all-rounders without sacrificing that top four? Because for the time being, we can't seem to make that adjustment. And it's
sometimes you have to. Sorry, I was just going to say sometimes you have to sacrifice things for the greater good, though.
You want to sacrifice the land, don't you?
I'm not naming names here. Personally, I would bring Joe Root into the side, as I've said, for you know months. I would definitely Joe Root has to be in the side with me, and he showed that in this year's blast, and he showed this winter how good a player of spin he is. And if you're thinking we're playing in the subcontinent here, he has to be in the side. You know, so then just to throw another name out there, and you mentioned Moeen Ali as a finisher or a potential finisher for England. Moeen Ali opens for Worcester.
Oh, no.
He's not really a finisher. So that's the thing, you know, you can look. I mean, there's so many different ways to build a T20 side. There's so many different ways to go about it. You know, if you look at certain sides, for example, Lanks did it with Aaron Lilly. Just he's not really a batter. He just goes out there and gives it a whack, and we put him at three as a pinch hitter. Could England maybe explore that option and move Milan up to the top of the order? You know, that's why I mentioned Sam Curran in, you know, 5 years' time. He's shown how good he can be with the bat. You know, in 5 years' time, could Sam Curran be batting three for England? He's open in the IPL. So, you know, could that be a role he plays one day for England? There's so many options. There's so many options. And that's why I think guys like Sam Billings is so harsh because they're quality players. Sam Billings could be your finisher. It depends if you're saying your finisher's number five or number six. Sam Billings could be that. Because to me, that's why I see his best chance of getting in this England side at. You know, obviously you're not going to drop Owen Morgan, but if Owen Morgan got an injury, if Owen Morgan got an injury, who comes into the side? For me, Sam Billings. So, you know, there's so many different options and so many different ways of building and structuring a T20 side that England can't really... They're in a win-win situation here because they either pick Ben Stokes at the top of the order or in the top four, and, you know, he bats incredibly and strikes at 150, 160, 170. Or you bat Stokes at number 5, 6, and the top four bat incredibly and strike at 150, 160, 170. So it's a win-win, whichever way you look at it. It really is to me. It's such a hard decision. But as I say, the bowling attack picks itself at least. You know, Rashid, Archer, Jordan, Wood, you think they're probably definitely going to play. But one thing I will ask, actually, is your opinion on Rashid opening the bowling?
I liked it. I liked it today because there's a genuine reason, actually, with regards to this series, which is so interesting. I imagine that Nathan Lemon, the team analyst, actually had a real say in this matter, to be fair, because Kelra Hall and Rohit Sharma, for those who don't know, do struggle at the start of their innings to get away against leg spin. And we saw that today. Kelra Hall didn't really look too convincing. Neither did Rohit. They didn't absolutely go out there and smash Rashid from ball one. And it was the same in the first T20I, wasn't it? And of course, Rashid got the massive, massive wicket of Virat Kohli. The only thing that I would say today, potentially, we could have given Rashid another go in the power play as soon as Kohli came in. That's something which I was surprised we didn't see. But again, maybe Morgan was holding him back, which is fair enough. It's Adil Rashid. He's a bona fide wicket taker.
And I guess that's another thing wrong with England, the makeup of England's side. And that's where you can argue, you know, you maybe have to sacrifice Sam Curran, who, as I've said, is a great player. I'm a massive Sam Curran fan. But maybe you do have to sacrifice him in order to get a Moeen Ali or a Matt Parkinson in the side. You know, because, well, Moeen Ali can definitely open the ball, and he's done it before for England. Mm-hmm. So reasonable success as well. You'd think in the T20 series against South Africa, one before last. And I remember he got Quinton Ndoukou out in a power play. Mm. So it's not exactly he's not exactly bad in those situations. So maybe that's a sacrifice that you have to make. And just say to Sam Curran, look, you're a class player. You will be in the future. But for the greater good of the side, as I say, you're going to have to miss out. And, you know, it's such a hard decision. But, I mean, that's another benefit of Joe Root is he offers you more bowling. He has opened the bowling for England. He's got Chris Gayle out in the World Cup final, for goodness sake. So, you know, I mean, for me, Joe Root has to be in the side, and then problem solved.
It's interesting, isn't it? And to be fair, we'll be talking about this until the T20 World Cup comes about. But yeah,
and we'll only know after the T20 World Cup.
Exactly. Of course, this is all just theoretically speaking, of course. And fingers crossed we can get the best out of Ben Stokes. I'm definitely not criticising him in any shape or form. I want to see the best out of Ben Stokes. He's a brilliant player. But it is going to be interesting to see how we line up ahead of that first World Cup match, won't it, in November down in India. But yeah, Joe, before we end today's podcast then, just any final words on today's game? Because it was a fantastic game. What did you make of it?
I was personally disappointed Ishan Kishan didn't get the chance to open the batting again, because I think he's a good player. From a more neutral perspective, obviously, it works out well in the end for England, but just for pure cricket entertainment, I wish he'd opened the batting, because I mean, he showed how good he was the other day. He's a good entertainer, very, very good player as well. But we retreated to two masterclasses really by Virat and Butler, and yeah, you can't really knock it. And Morgan, it's an incredible achievement, that 100 T20s. I just said, I mean, him and Rohit were both playing in the same game. They both done it. Mm. And who is it? Shoaib Malik and Ross Taylor. So it's a pretty elite group to be in.
Absolutely. And of course, a fantastic game, fantastic win for England. Sets up the series quite nicely, doesn't it? Heading into the fourth and fifth later this week. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it for this week's weekly podcast, Joe. I don't think there's anything else to really touch upon, is there?
No, not that I can think of. Yeah, just more T20. There's obviously nothing county-wise happening at the moment. So it's just England at the moment. But county friendlies actually will be happening soon. I know that for a fact. So that is
next week.
Maybe something we can start to look at a little bit more. So that should be good. So, and yeah, less than a month now to the start of the season, which is always exciting.
23 days until Warwickshire versus Derbyshire, Lancs versus Sussex down at Hove. It's a good. It's a good feeling.
Not the time. It's not the time you want to be time of the year to play in Hove, really, is it? It's not a good time for the years, playing.
It's not exactly like the height of June or July.
No.
But no, either way, isn't it just fantastic? And of course, we will be doing a special preview show covering every single one of the 18 counties ahead of the county championship in due course. So keep an eye out for that. But that is pretty much it from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast for this week's weekly wrap-up. Thank you very much for tuning in, guys. And as always, we'll see you on the next one.